Damn radio, damn right. I am Samuel Trapp. This is International Flavor that you are listening to on damn radio this morning. And I'm very damn glad to have you. And I'm hoping that the sound is coming through all right and that there's no errors in my technology, because I am coming to you live from Minsk, Belarus. Which is actually Minsk, Belarus. And apparently it's a faux pas to call it Belarus. You don't do that. And that is a bad plan. And I'm hoping the sound comes in pretty good. It looks like the meters are all doing okay, that the sound is coming in all right. I had done a recorded show the other night to make sure that I have one in case I need to upload it. And I'm hoping that is not the case, that we will be able to listen to tonight's show. But tonight we are only going to go the hour and a half. And I thought it was very much worthwhile to get together with you and to give you a timeline, if you will, of what is going on and what went on, because I think this could be a fun drama session to go through a drama scenario of what is going on in the world, because there has been nothing but drama since. And the drama is a crazy level of drama coming to us, mainly from the likes of the Zelenskys of the world, the aftermath of this meeting, this historic meeting between Vladimir Putin. So what I thought I would do would be go back through the timeline. And it's pretty funny because the timeline that I'm giving you, I'm going to make no bones about it. This is the timeline that comes minute by minute, Greenwich Mean Time. Now, I will let you know that right now, I could probably accept phone calls, if anybody's willing to call in, and I think I could get it to work. So if somebody wanted to call in, you could call in still at 573-746-8020 and speak to me live in Belarus as I am broadcasting. But here it is 5 o'clock in the morning. So I am actually live at 5 a.m. I figured I would do the show live, at least this first time. I really wanted to, because my opinions have been developing over the last couple of days of travel. They're coming into you, and I'm really hoping that the sound comes out okay. And like I said, it appears that my meters are doing all just fine and that everything is coming in just right. Technology is so freaking incredible that I am able to come to you live from Minsk, Belarus. And before I get into my timeline of events, I wanted to tell you about the way you have to travel these days. So next week, I'm going to be in Moscow for the week. I've got a couple of interviews lined up over there. I've got hopefully a couple of extra meetings to try to get involved with a couple of things over there too, because I thought it was particularly important or particularly interesting or could be particularly engaging to get the points of view of people, but the time is off. So my live show happens every night at 9 p.m. Chicago time. But if you're in Belarus, you know, 9 p.m. Chicago time is 5 a.m. Belarus time. And it'll be 6 a.m. Moscow time. I believe it's only 1 hour in order to get there. But before we get to that, I wanted to tell you about the travels, about my first impressions of Belarus. And it is my very first time in Belarus. And I've never been to Minsk before. I have not been here. If there's any sort of bad, I'm sure JR would let me know, or somebody would if they're listening to the show. If the quality is garbage that's coming through, it doesn't appear to be, like I said. It appears that the sound is coming through just fine. I don't want to over-obsess about it, but again, anybody who knew my first 40 or 50 shows on damn radio knows that I'm not the most technologically gifted on the planet. And so I want to make sure that everything appropriately. And I do have to go buy one or two pieces of equipment that I left at home, if you can believe that, on my trip over here. But I think it'll be worth the purchase. I kind of wanted to upgrade anyway, if I do have to go to get the things that I'm talking about. But first of all, I want to give you my impressions of the travel here and what happened. First of all, I generally travel Turkish Airways, and especially getting over to this side of the planet, because they have they're very professional in how they do it. I like flying Turkish Airlines. So if your layover in Istanbul, which is virtually every layover you have, there could be other layovers, I'm sure, but every one that I have happens to go through in Istanbul, and it's a beautiful airport, first of all. So you get that to your benefit. Excellent food, excellent air lounge, on the Turkish Airlines side and stuff like that, where you can go hang out in the air lounge. Well, if you're there longer than a set number of hours, and I don't remember the number of hours it is, but if you're there longer than a set number of hours, then they provide for you a trip. I've had a trip to the Bosphorus. You get on a ship and they take you on a 2-3 hour cruise of the Bosphorus and provide you lunch and show you the Bosphorus Straits and the shipping channels, probably the most one of the most busy shipping channels on the planet. And it's outstanding gateway between Asia and Europe. Beautiful mosques everywhere, excellent history. They've been around for centuries, and so there's plenty to see and to walk around and to go and intake, if you will. They have great Turkish candy stores and Turkish sweets, and are some of the best in the world. Turkish coffee is outstanding. Turkish tea, all of these things. The Turkish food, in fact, is outstanding food. And so if you like the Turkish culture, like I like Turkish culture, it's there. But if your layover involves an overnight, if it's like your flight gets in late and you're going to end up staying overnight, they give you a hotel room. And so you get up as part of your fee, right? And so you get a hotel room and you spend the night. My flight was going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 22-hour layover. So they give you a free hotel room. And mine happened to be on the 16th floor of this fantastic hotel. And I took the metro to get there, and the metro was really cool, and they have a subway system. So it was, I could have gotten an Uber or taken a shuttle or something like that, but I chose to do the metro, which was really cool. And then found a restaurant for eating late at night. They give you free breakfast as part of your deal, and off you travel. Okay, and it's free. Again, my favorite four-letter word has always been started with an F. And mine ends with an E, but it's free. And so I like that. And it was fantastic to wander around at night and see Istanbul at nighttime. Very nice. And then get up and have a nice breakfast and then get on a flight and come to Belarus. Actually, I flew not to Belarus. I flew to Lithuania, Vilnius. Okay. And from Vilnius because there's, sanctions and there's all kinds of weird stuff on where you fly, so you can get pretty creative if you do it. But I have a Russian visa that I've had for, a while. It's a 3-year visa, and I think I got probably 9, 10 months left on it before I got to get a new one. And so at any rate, a Russian visa helps to get you into Belarus. And if I could go just as cheaply to get from Istanbul, or get into Belarus, I could get into I could get into Lithuania. So I flew into Vilnius, Lithuania, which was really cool too, because they are very much anti-Russian. And I did a bit of a story on this in a little bit of a rant I did the other day on a channel. So I am against the cultural destruction or taking everything down that is trying to destroy Russia as a culture. And it's pretty comical because I've talked about this before in Northport, Florida, where you run into people who are Ukrainian and speak Ukrainian and want to speak Ukrainian, and they refuse to speak Russian. Okay. You saw that what Vladimir Putin did when he came over and spoke with Trump the other day, right? And what they were talking about and how they reacted with each other. And Putin, who rarely does this, he speaks German fluently, but he doesn't. You don't hear him say much in English. He said a few things in English, and it was, for Trump's benefit. And I've got some observations on that when we get into what happened, but I'm going to go through the timeline of that to get to the drama here in a minute. But I want to tell you about my adventures in getting to Vilnius, first of all. To Minsk, first of all. I always get stuck on the Seinfeld episode. You remember when George Costanza, borrowed Jerry Seinfeld's book and the library cop came after Jerry Seinfeld for stealing a book from the public library years ago, Tropic of Cancer, that George was going to return, and he didn't. And the Tropic of Cancer, and they always talked about the strange erotic tales of a girl traveling from Moscow to Minsk. Well, I've been to Moscow, but never to Minsk, and I'm not a girl. But, you know, I, every time I think of Minsk, I think of George can't stand you, and Jerry Seinfeld, and the stealing of the book, or the cop, the library police. Anyway, stupid, foolish story, but there you go. And a sad reflection of my history, or my history lessons and where they come from. Very sad that they come from Seinfeld and not knowing anything about history. But here I have my, I want to talk about border crossings and talk about people trying to discount you from speaking in Russian. So everybody in Lithuania also speaks Russian. And there's a whole channel of people that were, because when I researched this poor part of my little tale that I'm telling you, the funny part is that people, Russian people living in Lithuania, are embarrassed to speak their own language. Why? Because of cancel culture. They're, if you say something in Russian, they're going to cancel you. And so they don't want to offend people. So they don't speak their own language. They don't talk about, you know, their own culture, their own history. All this. What kind of nonsense is that? Of course, we've broadcast it all over the planet with our own Russophobia, and that is everywhere, that we have Russian disinformation. We have the disinformation of Hollywood that paints every Russian as a drug dealer, as an arms supplier, as a mafia man, something like that, and is very destructive and will kill people, or some bumbling comic guy like in Armageddon, you know, that guy, and who turns out to be pretty professional, but, you know, they want to paint them in these weird brushes, okay? But now we're supposed to hate everything Russian because of all of this. Well, that is alive and well, because people are still doing it. And so you're not allowed to speak it in America. You're not allowed to speak it in Lithuania. You're canceled everywhere you go when you speak it, except Belarus. Okay, here they have dual signs in the signs column, all in Belarus and in Russian languages. And so that's rather interesting. And when you get to Minsk, Belarus, it's a beautiful. I took had a breakfast in a Zavtriki, which is breakfast. It was very nice, very modern, very cool. And it was like 7:38 o'clock in the morning. And the city is very much like Europe in that people don't go out Europe, a lot of places. The young not go out until 11, 12 o'clock at night, and they're just finishing up at 7 o'clock in the morning. So walking down the street, people still carrying, let's see here, are we coming? We had a little bit of Discord. Let us check and make sure that we are coming in well. It appears that we are. Sorry for those brief snafus. So the technology got me, but I'm watching the meters religiously and hoping to catch them if there's anything that comes up. So I apologize if we came in, but like I said, I'm in a little balcony overlooking a place that is in between all these brand new apartment buildings, and it's like got a garden in the middle, and where playground stuff like that. And very nice. Very impressed so far with the city of Minsk. And then the end of the week, I'm taking a so I'm going to drive around and see a bunch of places, historic. And then the fall end of next week or end of this week, I'm going to take a train to Moscow, and we're going to see what's up over there. And then I have a few things lined up over there, so you can enjoy this trip with me as we go. And hopefully the technology will continue to work. And if I have to record a show, well, we'll have a couple in the can that we can use as a recording in the event that that is necessary. But for tonight's show, I am definitely live. And again, if anybody would like to call in, you can do so. And hopefully the technology won't crap out on us. And the technology is for phoning in would be 573-746-8020. And it, appears that it's going to work out quite well for us all. But now to get to the real point of today's show, which is to tell you about some of the things that have gone on. Let's hope not. It's still there. Everything appears to be coming in just perfectly. And hopefully I don't have to come off of the screen. Because if I do, sometimes it's not been recording all the way, and we'll make sure that. Oh, well, there we are. I don't know why it is. Well, we've had a couple of different incidents with the discussion on the through Discord, and I'm hoping that it doesn't affect it terribly. And it doesn't appear to be. The network still appears strong. Everything appears very nice, and I just want to make sure that everything comes through all right. So let's start with Friday afternoon, and what was, because Greenwich Mean Time was is about call it 6 hours ahead of Alaska time. Maybe it's seven. I don't know. I didn't go look at it, but I think it's six or seven. Okay, and when you get into it, when they first started this show, it was around 6:45 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Then it showed that Pete Hegseth, Scott Bessent, and Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick, that they were going to join the Putin-Trump summit for an expanded bilateral meeting and lunch, said the White House. That's according to the White House. And then the video at about the same time, minute or two and within there, showed videos taken of the press room. They showed the joint press room where you saw the aftermath, where they had the joint press conference afterward, with where it said pursuing peace on the background. And the next thing you get is right before 7 o'clock, right before 7 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time, you get that that Putin has arrived in Alaska with a summit for Trump, and there's a red carpet rolled out. You got a whole video for you to see them. Excellent photo opportunities, and the two, and President Trump met him personally, all by himself, out on the tarmac, came out. And so let's get to the drama of where we go from here, because then Putin and Trump stepped off of their planes almost simultaneously onto the tarmac, greeted each other ahead, and greeted each other ahead of the summit. That was the news blurb. Okay. The following news blurb, about 15 minutes after 7 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time, the two leaders shook hands, patted each other on the shoulder, and exchanged smiles, pleasantries, greetings. They posed for a joint photo before Putin got into Trump's car, his limousine, with the Russian leader smiling from the window as they drove off. And that was a nice little video, right? And the commentary, the drama surrounding this little thing was a big deal. What is he doing in the what is he doing in the president's motorcade? Well, motorcade, in the president's limo. Why is he in there? Why is he treating him like this? People remember how Zelensky was treated And Zelensky was treated like, you know, the Antichrist. He was the, you know, coming in like, who's the guy from Thor's brother coming in? He's being treated like Thor's brother. And he's not the god of anything. He's not supposed to be, right? Putin is supposed to be demonized and evil. So already they were starting to come unglued. They could see this is not where they wanted. And this will probably take my whole hour and a half to get through all of these because there's so many timelines. And here we are. It's been a whole half hour since these news people are looking for little tidbits of something to report to us, right? And at the, right at 7:30, the first footage of the talks has emerged. American journalists can be seen calling out questions to Putin at his meeting, as his meeting with Trump gets underway at Elmendorf Richardson Air Base in Camp Richardson, Elmendorf Air Force Base. Richardson's the army side of that same base. Then Putin and Trump have officially begun their summit 10 minutes later. And there's the start of them walking out, you know, where they tried to get some to answer some questions in the beginning and it didn't happen. And then they walked out. Well, pretty soon there was about a half an hour in, well, 15 minutes into the actual meeting. As the talks unfold, the media have now been given, you know, their first little taste of drama from the American side. They were given the footage of B-2 Spirit bomber escorted by four F-22 fighters that flew over Putin and Trump in the Alaskan sky as they posed for the photo. So this came up right at the beginning when they were posing for the photo in the beginning, right? And remember, Putin and Trump are standing out on this red carpet with no interpreters, nobody standing there, just the two of them. If they remember, if they're taking over the planet, you know, it's starting right here, just the two of them. And Trump and Putin had no interpreters at their meeting on the airfield, as the Russian leader speaks English well. It is highly unusual to see the leaders of two superpowers in the same limousine. Oh my God. Meanwhile, they had snipers, armored vehicles, hundreds of security personnel guarding the venue of the meeting. They had people everywhere. They were massively covering the entire thing, right? And then the White House released a joint photo of a smiling Trump and Putin ahead of the talks that said pursuing peace. So while they're meeting, people are releasing news still. And then comes along NBC. Okay, and what does NBC have to say? NBC says now it's fully 2 hours since the beginning of this. It is 21:12 Greenwich Mean Time. NBC compared Trump's seemingly warm greeting of Putin with his tense Oval Office reception of Vladimir Zelensky. We're getting the hints that, you know, this is going to be, you know, we got to beat up on Trump for not, you know, licking the boots of Vladimir Zelensky. And he is licking the boots of Vladimirovich Putin is what's going on. And people don't like it. Oh, goodness, you can tell that they're not going to like this. And so they say that meeting in February ended with Trump and Vice President J.D. Vance criticizing the Ukrainian leader for his own lack of gratitude. So you see where they're going with this already, right? The mistreatment. Oh, can you believe it? Peace is never going to happen if NBC has anything to say about it. And then right around the same time, the White House has called the meeting between Trump and Putin historic, as it published on social media a picture of the two leaders walking the red carpet on the tarmac together, right? So they're already getting bitchy that it's being called historic while it's still going on. Then talks between President Putin and Donald Trump involving close aides have concluded. This is at 10:20 Greenwich. And excuse me, and they involve close aides, and the Kremlin has said it published a video showing the Russian delegation leaving the room. Oh, you know what I forgot to mention? I forgot to mention Sergei Lavrov wearing his USSR sweater, or a sweatshirt, which has prompted all kinds of talk, and prompted, actually, a huge increase in the sale of USSR paraphernalia and sweatshirts. In fact, I think I'm going to look for one. I'm going to buy me a new USSR sweatshirt. I used to have one, but I'm going to find another one. Maybe I can find a USSR hockey team jersey, because there was some talk that maybe that was a USSR hockey team jersey that Sergei Viktorovich was wearing. But we can't be positive what's going on there. But boy, there's all kinds of reasons to get upset about this before we even get anywhere. So right now, all you have is drama. So drama includes all the people from all over the planet talking about this, right? And let's see. Later, it's at a joint press conference of the two presidents will start very soon, right? And so they're trying to give as much detail as they can before they get to the hopefully something meaty. And so far, there's been nothing meaty. But boy, I've talked about it now for nearly half an hour. And so let's see. Then we have, let's see, the talks between Trump and Putin. This came out at 22:50. So the talks between Trump and Putin lasted for more than 2.5 hours, the longest in-person meeting between the two leaders, and surpassed their previous summit that they held in Helsinki in 2018. They talked even longer. And just 10 minutes later, President Putin already gave. They let President Putin speak first. Oh my God, at the Pursuing Peace press conference, President Putin spoke first, and he spoke for 9 minutes, and then Trump only spoke for 3. And Putin did his typical, right, where he, well, not typical, but he wants people to understand the historic nature of this. My entire show that I did yesterday, which we may have to use tomorrow. I might go ahead and let this be used tomorrow, but you should be able to listen to it on internationalflavor.com even now, if you feel like it. And you can go out there and listen to it, because I talked about how they allowing him to speak first. A lot of people are taking it as who's controlling the negotiations. It's Trump and not Putin. But I say it's Trump being a smart, smart person right here. Because everybody knows who Putin is the guest of. Everybody knows the historic picking of the Alaska in particular. I did a small history piece on the show last night as well, which was an extra show that I haven't run, which I probably need to run, so I might do it tomorrow night. Have JR run that for you tomorrow night, because the last 15 minutes of the show, I did a history of the swap of the territory and why it occurred from the Russian side, who instigated that sale of Alaska. Because the frontier was too big for them. They already had gone coast to coast, basically, in Russia. What were they going to do? Keep going in America? They couldn't, and they couldn't keep it up. So Catherine the Great had some issues with that. And so you can listen to that history, or if you know about it, maybe Professor Maubin could give us some insights into that. And it was a pretty good story anyway. And so President Putin described the talks as constructive and useful, and that they were held in an atmosphere of mutual respect. And Trump pretty much echoed that. And he said, we haven't finalized anything. We're not sure where this is going to go. But, they've given us a basic framework. And then, but before he got there, Vladimir Vladimirovich said, our relations had sunk to the lowest point since the Cold War, said Putin, saying that the state of affairs is not good for either country or the world. That's what I've been saying forever. Not that I'm in charge here, I'm not. But even if you have the disagreement coming along about Ukraine and you have the disagreement between the countries, there are all kinds of other areas wherein we should be working, including in nuclear arms control. And so I wouldn't surprise me, frankly, to hear something about nuclear arms control or steps to re-enter some kind of a realistic arms limitations between these two countries again coming out of Alaska. Maybe that's something that they are giving up upon or that they are able to engage upon so that the Ukraine seems a little less dramatic. And I think that's what's happened as you see when we continue through this timeline, because we're still on the 15 August timeline. We're still late in the night on the Greenwich Mean Time, right? Uh-oh, my meters aren't moving. What does this mean? I sure hope that they are, and that they haven't just ceased to work. Oh, they seem okay. Everything appears to be working. Sometimes it looks like it just kind of times out a little bit, so I'm hoping that's not a bad deal. But right at 11 p.m., Russia, according to Putin, Russia is generally interested in ending the Ukraine conflict and ensuring that the resolution in Ukraine is a long-term peace. Moscow hopes that the European capitals will not create obstacles or attempt to disrupt this anticipated progress, they said. And you know what? I really hope that to be true. Oops, I hope we're not experiencing technical difficulties here, because I don't see them I'm going to quit worrying about it, though, because it appears that the connection is okay voice-wise, and it's just like the video on my screen might freeze up from time to time. And the last one on the night of the 15th, the last broadcast, was Putin hopes that the agreements reached with Trump will pave the way for peace in the Ukraine conflict, and he thanked Trump for the candid tone of their conversations. And frankly, that needs to be mirrored. And nobody has given us any detail of what really has come out. And I've been paying attention this weekend, trying to find anything. You get whispers, but nothing really from either side. There are plenty of articles to go through if I ever get through this timeline. So they also said that Putin said he could confirm that if Trump had been president in 2022, there wouldn't have been any conflict in Ukraine. He said that he had tried to persuade Joe Biden not to bring the situation to the point where a confrontation would be inevitable, but that didn't work out. So now we have Putin playing diplomat and giving Trump what? Kudos. Trump needs to get his kudos in order for this to work. You gotta kiss the butt of the leader of the free world, and Vladimir Vladimirovich is doing it. So this is a positive thing. Okay, then Trump says that the two men had a very productive meeting and many issues were discussed, but they didn't achieve a full understanding and there was no deal yet. But he did say, I have very good relations with President Putin. And he wanted to make sure that people are aware of that, from, you know, that he believes they have good relationships. Hell, does that mean more Russophobia? Does that mean more, I don't know what? Putin, or Trump is a puppet? I don't think so. I don't believe that to be true at all, but that's the way people are trying to twist it afterward. A little bit later, Trump said that the most important thing is that they had a decent chance to achieve peace, and he expressed hope to see Putin again soon, and saying that the Russian president does want to end. Putin switched into English right here, which people have been talking about, and he invited Trump to Moscow for the next round of talks. Next time in Moscow, he said. And Trump said that he could see that as possibly happening. And then the two presidents left to have their press conference after make statements without any questions from the media. And then now, from his point of view, Putin visited the Fort Richardson National Cemetery near Anchorage to honor Soviet pilots who died in Alaska while ferrying U.S.-made aircraft to the Soviet Union under the Lend-Lease program during World War II. And the president was filmed making a sign of the cross after laying flowers at one of the tombs. How do you like that? And so that came out pretty well. You know, that's a strong deal, him taking some historic action while he is there to visit the graves of people buried jointly, recognizing the friendly nature of our countries is a good idea. Then Brand New Day. Brand New Day comes across Alaska Summit as a milestone in the emergence of a new world order and is a symbol of a changing era. This came from Soviet political commentator Sergei Polatayev. He said it showed the West no longer sets the rules and that the world is becoming multipolar. And then at 20 GMT, Greenwich Mean Time, midnight, in other words, just after midnight, Putin left Alaska. Okay? And then Trump greatly appreciates the results. He gets on, according to Fox News, he said he would give a 10 when he has the comment of the outcome on these meetings, a 10. So this is, here comes the drama from the European side, because trust me, it's coming. The Kremlin described the talks as very positive. So the two parties who this war is all about, this war has nothing to do with Ukraine, by the way. This war has nothing to do with Ukraine, except this is who they've been using to, continue. The lives of the young men are coming from Ukraine. This is horrific. And so that is, but it is still continuing. So Putin and Trump did not take any reporter questions in the press conference because the two leaders had provided exhaustive statements, said Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov. And he said that this would allow us to confidently move forward together in seeking settlement options on the conflict, right? So a little while later, Putin and Trump agreed on a lot of points, said the U.S. president on Fox News. There's one or two pretty significant items, but I think they can be reached, he said. Now it's really up to President Zelensky to get it done. Right? And by 1:30, Greenwich Mean Time, only an hour and a half later, Trump described the summit with Peking as a warm meeting, while calling his counterpart a strong guy. We're pretty close to it, he said, referring to the agreement that Ukraine is going to have to agree to it. Maybe they'll say no, because former U.S. President Joe Biden handed out money like it was candy, and Europe gave him a lot of money. So he's starting to beat up on Zelensky. When he was asked by Hannity what advice he would give to Zelensky, Trump said, make the deal. Now he's playing deal maker, but nobody knows what the deal is. So ultimately, 2 hours afterward, here we are at 2 a.m., the ultimate Ukrainian deal depends on not only on Zelensky, but on the European nations, said Trump, adding that they have to get involved a little bit. He did not rule out potential trilateral meetings involving Putin, Zelensky, and himself. If they'd like, I'll be at that next meeting. They're going to set up a meeting now between Zelensky and Putin, he said, adding that he wants to make sure this gets done, right? And then Russian officials, right after that, presented the U.S. with a list of 1,000 Ukrainian service members that Moscow intends to release. Trump said, that was agreed to today. Ukraine have to accept them, and Russia will release them back to Kyiv. Moscow accused Kyiv of essentially refusing to take back hundreds of Ukrainian soldiers in Russian custody, noting that out of 1,000 people, Ukraine took only 2. So Trump is now saying, you have to take it. Here we are. Trump signals right after that that the U.S. is so far holding off on imposing new tariffs on Russia's trading partners because of what happened today. I think I don't have to think about that right now, Trump told Fox. I may have to think about it in 2 weeks or 3 weeks or something. But we don't have to think about that right now. So tariffs are gone. Tariffs are gone against India, against China, against Brazil, right? Allegedly, we don't know what the aftermath is going to be from that. So now 3 hours in, Trump suggested he could be in line for the Nobel Peace Prize if he helps broker peace in Ukraine. but insisted his past record already merits such recognition. Somebody said, if I get this settled, I'll get the Nobel Peace Prize, Trump said in an interview with Sean Hannity. I'm not involved in it, but what about the other six wars or whatever it is? I mean, those were big. I love how this guy talks. Some world leaders formally put his name forward for the honor in 2025. Cambodian Prime Minister Hun Manet nominated Trump for meeting a ceasefire in the border clash with Thailand. And Benjamin Netanyahu submitted the nomination, citing diplomacy, if you want to call it that, in the Middle East. I disagree with that one. But that's okay. Who am I? I'm nobody important. Trump, a little bit later, Trump urged Ukraine's Zelensky to pursue negotiated settlement, describing the conflict as a terrible war where he's losing a lot. Trump said that ending the fighting would be a great achievement for them. Forget about me, framing peace as primarily Ukraine's responsibility. He said that European nations must play a stronger role in the efforts to end the conflict, and now it's really up to Zelensky. And I would also say to European nations, they have to get involved a little bit. He said that a direct meeting, you know, that he might be there, you know, not that I want to be, but want to make sure that this gets done. So then came Trump downplayed the idea that Western pressure forced Putin into any sort of talks. I don't want to say anything forced him to the table. He's a very smart guy. Nothing brought him to the table, so to speak, Trump said, adding that negotiations were progressing despite the conflict. Well, I thought that one was pretty interesting when you go from the drama side, because you know Trump, he is in charge of everything. Trump is to blame for anything good that occurred. And so for him to say that he didn't force these kind of talks, I mean, that's a concession right there. And then later, Melania Trump sent a personal letter to President Putin about Ukrainian and Russian children, which the U.S. President Trump delivered during the summit, said Reuters. The unnamed U.S. officials told the agency the letter focused on what they called the abduction of children during the conflict. Ukraine and its Western backers have accused Moscow of deporting Ukrainian children to Russia. Russia said any minors taken were evacuated from the conflict zone for safety reasons and would be returned to parents or legal guardians upon request, and that they already have done a whole bunch of those. So that issue is allegedly still out there, but the dream that this was some 20,000 kids is nonsensical. You know, they're saying that there's 28, 29, something like that, some crazy low number. Let's see. Trump said, then, got to use this for every little chance that you can, right? Trump said that Russian President Putin echoed his claims of U.S. election fraud, telling him that mail-in ballots mean that votes could be rigged. In the interview with Sean Hannity, Trump said that Putin told him, now here we are with, he told me, it is impossible to have mail-in voting and have honest elections. Well, I happen to agree with that. Maybe Putin should be running the country? Trump used the remarks to repeat, that's a joke, by the way. Trump used his remarks to repeat his own allegation that America's voting system itself is corrupt. He argued that mail-in ballots allow multiple people to vote per person and undermine election integrity and affected the 2020 presidential race. Here we are, a whole 4 hours later. Trump is still running. He's still moving. Trump said he maintained a strong personal rapport with Putin and argued that the leaders could realize advanced U.S.-Russia cooperation if not for political turmoil in Washington. I have always had a great relationship with Putin, and we would have done great things together. Their land is incredible, rare earth, oil, gas, everything. Trump said he blamed investigations into alleged Russian interference in 2016 and he repeatedly referred to that as a hoax. Well, I agree with him. I think it's all BS. But, you know, good to focus upon it and keep on going. A little while later, the Russian summit fully justified the motto, Pursuing Peace, said Russian State Duma Foreign Affairs Chair Committee person Leonid Slutsky. He called the meeting between Putin and Trump productive. Now Russia's waking up, right? And they got to start talking about this. It's 6 a.m., right? At the time these things are starting to come out in Russia. And he said that although no breakthrough was expected, the talks were a significant turning point, and Trump rated it 10 out of 10, said Slutsky on Telegram. He said that Anchorage will go down in history as a milestone in bilateral negotiations, and still hopes that the next one takes place in Moscow. Then the Trump-Putin summit in Alaska was a joint success. The very fact of the meeting in Alaska, its tone, and the outcome are great joint successes to the two presidents. This from a Russian parliament upper chamber member, Konstantin Kosachev. If I've said his name right, could be Kosachev. He added that Putin and Trump have both made a tremendous personal contribution to achieving the maximum possible result. And he underscored the significance of the talks at the military base. So that is good stuff. Where's the next one? Here we are still, early morning, where John Bolton comes out. Okay, now you want to talk drama. Talk about this a-hole who, again, he wants to go back to the 80s. Here's an 80s guy. Former U.S. National Security Advisor Bolton said that Putin emerged stronger. So now we're starting to get all the NBCs of the world, all of this stuff coming out that we want it to be. Talk about how poorly Trump did. That's what we're supposed to do, right? We're supposed to be against him. And he argued that Moscow met its goals and Washington gained little. Well, he don't know. He wasn't even there. And who knows what they were trying to get to. So I think Trump did not lose, but Putin clearly won, said Bolton on CNN, of course. Trump didn't come away with anything except more meetings. Putin has gone a long way to establishing the relationship, which I've always believed was his key goal. He said that Putin avoided sanctions or ceasefires, while Trump achieved very little and claimed the U.S. leader looked very tired up there. Very tired, not disappointed, tired. The Bolton relationship has been underscored by years of mutual criticism. The American leader dismisses Bolton as overly hawkish, and Bolton accuses Trump of prioritizing personal politics over national security. I suppose there could be echoes of that for both of them, but I don't know. I don't like Bolton coming out and claiming we didn't get anything out of that. If we get this war over, Trump gets a lot, right? The White House had said, we made some great progress today. We had an extremely productive meeting and many points were agreed to, right? That was after the Bolton thing. And the White House shared a photo of Trump meeting Putin during the talks, and they showed him from the aircraft, the F-22 fighter jets escorting the plane carrying Russian President Putin was shown as well. And let's see. Then the Hungarian foreign minister, Peter Zajarto, says in his dialogue, he posted something on X, the world is a safer place as long as there is a U.S.-Russia dialogue at the highest level, he said. Credit to both of them for making this summit happen. Today, once again, confirmed the war in Ukraine will not be settled on the battlefield, but at the negotiating table. That is actually, you know, quite true, Mr. Szijjártó. Hope, I don't know if I said that right, but foreign minister of Hungary needed some discussion in there. Then all day on the 16th, all freaking day, that they were gonna, they were talking about what comes next, right? Regular consultation on normalization is coming from the Russian side. Darchayev is a guy named, he was Russia's ambassador to Washington, Alexander Darchayev, hopefully more comes of this and that people start to work together. And I think it will. I think something positive will come of this. Hopefully the peace, but hopefully more even after as a result of that, I think would be just fantastic. Let's see here. Let's make sure that our connections are still going pretty well and that the voice is coming through, because the video feed terminated one more time, and I just get paranoid when that happens. So we want to make sure that everything is coming through okay. So right after this part of the morning is where things started to get interesting, because now Trump spoke by phone with Zelensky shortly after the meeting. Okay, now that news is coming out and hitting the airwaves, if you will. Early on the 7 a.m., basically, Greenwich Mean Time on the 16th. And so we are a full 10 hours later, I suppose, after the meetings took place, that he has spoken to them. The timing of the meeting between Putin and Trump, and where they're going to meet next, and whether it involves Vladimir Zelensky, was not raised. And so that needs to come about some more. An hour later, Trump and Zelensky held a one-on-one call Friday before Western European leaders joined the discussion, Ukraine's presidential office has reported. And then the leaders of France, Germany, Britain, Italy, Finland, and Poland took place, along with Ursula von der Leyen and whoever appeared. So now he is given them some information, but we still don't know what it is. Okay. And then Zelensky reported quickly on his Telegram channel that he was going to Washington on Monday to discuss all the details, and he had a long and substantive conversation with Trump by telephone. Okay. And then there was a Axios guy named Barak Ravid said, citing a source familiar with the conversation, he said, Trump spoke with Zelensky for an hour on X, he reported this. On the line as well were Secretary of State Rubio, White House envoy Witkoff. Afterward, the leaders of UK, France, Italy, Germany, blah, 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 those people already mentioned. The source of the call between Trump said that the call wasn't easy, I assume, for Zelensky to listen to, is what I think. And then Viktor Orban jumps in. The world is a safer place now that the leaders of the two biggest nuclear superpowers have resumed top-level diplomatic relationships, said Viktor Orban. He said, his post said, for years we've watched two biggest nuclear powers dismantle the framework of their cooperation and shoot unfriendly messages back and forth. That has come to an end. Today the world is a safer place than it was yesterday. Make every weekend be at least this good, said Viktor Orban. Well, it's hard not to echo those things, and I think that something should occur from the point of view of nuclear safety. Of course, I'm a little biased in that because that's the realm that I worked in all those years ago that we pretty much dismantled unilaterally. Then, a little bit later, German Chancellor Friedrich Merz called an impromptu cabinet meeting to discuss the results of the summit with his ministers, said Bild from anonymous sources. And 15 minutes after that, ambassadors from every EU member state are going to convene for an extraordinary meeting Saturday to discuss the bloc's next step after the summit, says Politico. The ambassadors were reportedly asked about to meet about the restricted format without their aides and telephones in an effort to avoid leaks on what they're going to do. So things are getting interesting, aren't they? And then Trump announced that after his summit with Putin and following phone calls with leaders, he will be pursuing a permanent peace agreement in Ukraine and not just a temporary ceasefire. Now, this is huge. This is what I've been saying forever. This means that in their talks that Putin finally got it across to him that, hey, I'm not agreeing to 30 days. I will agree to an end of the conflict. Let's end it. But I'm not going to agree for 30 days so you can rearm people. And so what does Trump do? He calls it a mere temporary ceasefire. And he's telling everybody, nope, that's not going to happen. We're not going to rearm. And he said, it was determined by all that the best way to end the horrific war between Russia and Ukraine is go directly to a peace agreement which would end the war and isn't mere ceasefire agreement, which do not hold up. You realize how huge that is? Then you got Lindsey Graham, crying Lindsey Graham. You know, this guy's worthless. The Ukraine conflict, here's him, knife into Trump, right? This guy's a fair-weather friend, for sure. You know, the Ukraine conflict could be wrapped up by Christmas, according to him, if Putin and Trump meet with Zelensky for a trilateral summit, said Senator Lindsey Graham. Now, how positive is this a-hole, right? He suggested that Trump will have to impose severe consequences on Russia and its trading partners if the meeting does not happen. Yeah. So we see whose side Lindsey Graham is on. He is on the side of his own pockets. He's on the side of continued war, and he is on the side of the military-industrial complex. In his post says, if there is a bilateral meeting between Trump and Zelensky and Putin, then I'm cautiously optimistic this war will end well before Christmas. If the meeting doesn't happen, I think Trump may have to deliver severe consequence to Putin. Yeah. Graham, who backs Ukraine, obviously, has urged the U.S. to supply record amounts of arms to Kyiv, from long-range missiles to more F-16s. Earlier this year, he's the one who introduced the 500% sanction. Yeah. So we know where he's going. We know where he will be. Just like Putin, he will never change his underwear. He will stay the same spot where he's going, right? Trump, he changes. He at least listens. He's flexible. But he changes his mind a lot. And right now, his mind is on the right side. We shall see whether the old Green Goblin or whether the old Graham convince him to go another way. Then Western European leaders issued their own statement. Uh-oh. While they welcomed Trump's efforts to stop the killing and to achieve a just and lasting peace, they made clear the EU and the UK will continue pressing for NATO's membership in EU and NATO. The statement insisted Ukraine must have ironclad security guarantees, no limitations on Ukraine's armed forces or cooperation with third countries. Russia cannot veto Ukraine's path to EU and NATO. Ooh, so we think that that's going to be, well, we know it's one of the things that Russia is going to want. Then Robert Fico from Slovak has welcomed the talks between Trump. He said he argued the summit rejected this black and white view. And a single mandatory opinion, which is everybody has to have on the conflict, and vigorously promoted by the Biden administration and continued to be advocated upon by the European Union. He said the Ukrainian conflict has its historical roots and we must speak equally about security guarantees for Ukraine and for the Russian Federation. Fico warned that the EU's unsuccessful strategy is to continue trying to weaken Russia through this conflict by all possible means, including incredible financial, political, or military assistance to Kyiv. And that Trump's approach reflects clear American pragmatism and support for America's interests. How about that? India welcomes the summit between Trump and Alaska, saying that the statement is highly commendable. But the official spokesperson for the government says India welcomes the summit in Alaska. India appreciates the progress. The way forward can only be through dialogue and diplomacy, and the world wants to see an end to the conflict in Ukraine. So the smart people are backing Trump, Putin, right? But Keir Starmer, here he comes. Keir Starmer, British Prime Minister, welcomes the peace efforts, calls for Ukraine's Vladimir Zelensky to be involved in the next phase, and he promises to keep tightening the screws on the Russian economy. Yeah, it's working real well so for you so far. And then Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni expressed hope for possible peace deal. A glimmer of hope finally opens for discussing peace in Ukraine, she said. President Macron jumps on board and said that Paris will work with its European allies to provide unwavering security for Ukraine. I welcome in this regard the readiness of the U.S. to contribute. We will work on this with them and with all our partners in the Coalition of the Willing. Still wants to point out that we're willing to fight for Ukraine or let Ukraine fight to the death, right? And the Finnish Prime Minister thanks Trump for his phone call with the Western leaders. Strong, credible security guarantees should be offered to Ukraine. Finland, you know, joined NATO in 2023. So obviously that's not a threat to Russia, right? German Chancellor Merz welcomes Trump's efforts, and Ukraine can count on our unwavering solidarity as we work toward a peace that safeguards Ukraine and Europe's vital security interests. Yeah, all you want to do, you want Ukraine for yourselves, and that's what's going on, but you're not willing to put up any blood, just money of your own people. Hopefully you get some crumbs that are left over. Western European leaders have been invited to the upcoming meeting between Trump and Zelensky for Monday. So more drama, right? And then, following the Alaska summit, Trump believes the best way to quickly negotiate peace in Ukraine is for Kyiv to cede to Moscow all parts of the Russian territories in the Donbass under Ukrainian control. So says the New York Times, citing anonymous officials. Well, it's going to have to be a part of it. U.S. President raised the issue of Western European allies on Saturday, said the outlet. It breaks from a strategy Mr. Trump, European allies, and Mr. Zelensky had agreed to before the summit, it said. Earlier in the day, U.S. President said the best way to end the war between Ukraine and Russia is to go straight to a peace agreement, not the ceasefire. All these geniuses are finally starting to say the correct thing, but they don't like it. Putin describes said that the summit was very useful. We have not held direct negotiations for any level. He reiterated some of the things he said about the root causes of getting rid of it. Turkey jumps on board. Turkey says, there's new momentum to ending the Ukrainian conflict, said Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. In a post on X, he expressed hope for this new process and Zelensky's participation to lay the foundation for lasting peace, and Turkey is ready to provide all kinds of contribution to the establishment of peace, right? Then Zelensky. Here we are, not even 24 hours later, and Zelensky says he refuses to cede to Moscow any parts of the Russian territories, the den of the Donbass, still under Ukraine control. But that doesn't, you know, maybe he's willing to consider the front lines then. That seems rather interesting and possible, don't you think? Following talks in Anchorage, the president said that he would be pursuing full peace, not a mere ceasefire, and he talked about these land swaps. So the Nordic and Baltic nations release a joint statement
Leaders of Denmark, Estonia, Finland, Iceland, Latvia, Lithuania, Norway, and Sweden demand that Ukraine not be forced to downsize its military or be limited in its cooperation with other countries, including regarding its NATO bid. They insist Ukraine and Western European nations should be part of the process. So now they're making demands to the old Trumpster. And daddy has to maybe issue some spankings in this regard. No decisions on Ukraine without Ukraine, and no decisions on Europe without Europe. Oh yeah, you believe Ukraine to be Europe? No. That's right. crazy. Let's see. During a call with Zelensky and European leaders, now we are almost to 8 p.m., almost 24 hours later, right? During a call with Zelensky and European leaders following the Alaska summit, Trump said he wants to hold a trilateral meetings fast. And now we get to August 22. We get to this coming Friday. So Zelensky shows up on Monday, and we will see what kind of forcing happens here. Then Putin told Trump Friday he was willing to discuss security guarantees for Ukraine and mentioned China as one of the potential guarantors. That could be interesting, don't you think? Lavrov, meanwhile, is back home, held a phone call with his Turkish counterpart to discuss the outcome of the settlement. Then again, we have Hungarian Minister Peter Cesaro and expresses hopes talks in Anchorage will pave the way for peace. Okay, we hope yesterday's talks in Alaska will open the way to peace. At the same time, we trust this will not end as it did 3.5 years ago, when Western Europeans torpedoed the Istanbul Peace Agreement. The process launched in Alaska must not be derailed. You know, good for you, Peter Sijarto. Good for you, Hungary. Yes, so what happens? Lavrov calls him and says, hey, here's an ally. We need to get together. So that news came out a little bit later. Then, in the last show of this live feed, which came about on the 16th, this is when they ended the tracking of this, Trump told European leaders, this is full 24 hours after the fact, Trump told all the European leaders that he hopes to hold a summit with Putin and Zelensky by Friday, although it is contingent on how his talks go with Zelensky on Monday. Says CNN. European officials also expect at least one leader of the EU to join the Washington meeting, although they don't know who. Now it says, I think we know that most of them do plan to show up. So this one, I tell you what, this was a high-level talks that came about. I'm still very curious, but I'm very, very much following the drama of it all. We haven't seen drama like this in a while, have we? And so everybody's headed now to Washington. Zelensky and the European leaders are all headed to Washington so the drama can continue. Russian President Putin has convened his meeting of the government and senior officials in Moscow to brief them on the outcome of the meetings. Donald Trump welcomed the opportunity to meet face-to-face. Trump said it was a difficult call with Zelensky. And Putin is, you know, hopeful. Russian delegation, they talked about all that. So we already knew all of that information. Nothing new from there. So there's plenty to be very happy about, in my opinion. And I think that it's about damn time for Trumpster to put an end to this thing. And I think there's a strong possibility of that. I think it could actually occur. And if it does, I think Trump needs to take a great deal of credit for that, is what I think. I think that Trump, if he does pull this off, it will be one of the biggest and brightest feathers in his cap. That's what I say. And I think he may actually
pull this off. But I've been positive before, only to have the carpet tugged right out from underneath me. It does happen from time to time where we are going to settle something and then it doesn't end up getting resolved at all, does it? And so since then, we've still had a little bit more drama, right? We had this 18 hours ago. So now we're fully 2 days in, right? So Germany's Merz says the EU and UK shouldn't overestimate their own influence on the settlement in Ukraine, as the US will play the lead role in the peace process, said Merz. Possible ways to resolve the conflict between Russia and Ukraine topped the agenda, German Chancellor told German broadcaster ZDF, that their talks have begun on settling the Ukraine. They will continue on Monday when Zelensky is expected in Washington, but Merz warned that Western Europe must not overestimate ourselves. European unity is important, but the decisive role in this war will continue to be played by the U.S. Trump has the power, both militarily and with appropriate sanctions, to influence Russia, he claims. Well, he knows he doesn't have it. The good news that came from Alaska, according to him, is that there are no territorial negotiations between Putin and Trump over the heads of the Ukraine and the Europeans, he said. They want that. They want those eastern parts of Ukraine back because they're the richest, elementally, everything. Uranium, coal, gas, everything over there that they can take possession of, if at all possible. So I don't know. With all the drama going on afterward, you can usually find out what they've said before, but there's still no, and I suppose we won't know until Monday what the actual content of these things were. But the news is all reporting, even in Ukraine, that the leaders of France, Germany, and Britain are in a panic, and they continue to want to do exactly what they've always done, blindly back Zelensky. Maybe they can send Boris Johnson over there again to throw a monkey wrench into any sort of peace talks. But as Americans, we should be tired of this bullshit, Nikes, and get it over with. And I hope Trump forces this issue. So Ukrainians backers in the EU and UK are in a panic. Putin and Trump, blah, blah, blah. Dmitriev, Russian president, was described by Dmitriev as having frank and substantive and a warm relationship with Trump. Now, does Zelensky have any of that? No. Zelensky's got nothing. He's got to go into U.S. and be afraid of not getting beat up again by Vance and Trump this time. So Dmitriev, who is the CEO of the Russian Direct Investment Fund and was among the country's delegation on the ground in Alaska, said on Telegram on Sunday that European and British supporters of the conflict are all in a panic because diplomatic efforts by Moscow and Washington. He said that links to a report by Politico, which states the Western European leaders are anxious, is actually to be taken as true. According to the outlet's sources, they plan to send Alexander Stubb of Finland to Washington and hopefully prevent any flare-ups between Trump and Zelensky and convince the U.S. president to include Europe because they're not being included. So, but Putin reiterated on Saturday that any settlement has to eliminate root causes, and that is NATO, demilitarization, and recognition of the territories, right? So we have that, and then Zelensky rejected Trump's push, as I already said. Then there was a meeting. Where did Zelensky fly? I forget. But he is, meeting all kinds of European leaders now. Ukraine's Zelensky and several leaders are due in Washington. Zelensky announced on Saturday that he would be traveling to the U.S. And on Sunday, Ursula von der Leyen said in a post that she and several other leaders would be joining Zelensky at his request to meet with Trump. Because obviously he's not going to win in that regard, you know, any sort of concession. So be told what to do. Meanwhile, several U.S. officials claim that considerable progress has been made. And there's Ukrainian officials fear a repeat of February's Oval Office clash between Zelensky, Trump, and Vance. Unfortunately, there is indeed such a risk, said Nikolai Beloskov of the Ukrainian National Institute for Strategic Studies, who added that Trump now believes it's Ukraine that should make major concessions for peace. Well, yeah, you're losing. Ugh. Zelensky is in an impossible bind ahead of the meeting with Trump in Washington. He risks either provoking Trump's anger or accepting a peace deal involving territorial concessions. This, according to Bloomberg, this is the existential dilemma confronting the Ukrainian leader as he travels to Washington for talks with the U.S. President Monday, said the outlet. Trump has left Zelensky little room to maneuver. The little green goblin, there's already talk about him being removed anyway. And, you know, that's inevitable, right? Witkoff came out. Now, I was very interested in his opinions, and he came out a little while ago, said that Donald Trump's envoy claims that Moscow made a significant shift in its demands during Alaska. Well, tell us what they are, damn it. Hear all this, but all I'm hearing so far is drama. And so he says that Russia is ready to make certain concessions, including land swaps with Ukraine. So says Witkoff. It's probably, like I said, Sumy, Kharkov, and Dnipropetrovsk regions. Who knows? But maybe something like that in order to get what they want. But I know they're not, that Russia will not give up on the four territories, nor Crimea. But nobody's even mentioned Crimea anymore. That suddenly became a given since in 2014. Anyway, so Witkoff told CNN Sunday that during the Alaska summit, the Russian delegation made some concessions at the table with regard to all five regions, which are Crimea, Donetsk, Lugansk, Zaporizhia, Kherson, and all former Ukrainian territories, which are now part of Russia. According to the official, Kremlin appears ready to conduct land swapping with the current front line serving as the starting point in some areas. Witkoff said that Moscow's demands have undergone a significant shift. On Saturday, the New York Times and Fox News, citing anonymous Europeans, claim that Trump endorses a specific peace plan that means Ukraine will cede the whole Donetsk and Lugansk, and Moscow agree to cease hostilities upon the current front lines in Zaporizhia and Kherson. So, we shall see. The Kremlin hasn't said anything on this yet, and officially, Moscow is insisting that Ukraine recognize Crimea, Donetsk, Lugansk, Zaporizhia, Kherson as Russian territory. But in his CNN interview, Witkoff touted a game-changing agreement by Russia to robust security guarantees. So maybe, you know, we shall see. He said it's akin to Article 5 being provided to Ukraine by the U.S. Who knows? Explaining Trump's endorsement of a comprehensive peace deal as opposed to a temporary ceasefire, Witkoff said it was due to a significant headway achieved during Alaska Peace Summit. We shall see. I hope so, because then it should be Witkoff getting the Nobel Peace Prize and not Trump, because Witkoff has been talking about this forever. Actually, Trump will get it anyway, I think, but Witkoff, if he's able to pull this off, he's been a realistic and vocal and, I don't know what, a true negotiator. Not just this somebody going over to Russia to prove who's got the bigger appendage, you know, to say, here's what we're going to do. You know, the Lindsey Grahams of the world, in other words. Let's see. Here was an interesting article. This one. Silence or secrecy? What Putin and Trump aren't saying in Alaska. It says, the blockbuster without an ending, the Alaska summit and what comes next. Okay. Now, I'm not sure I can get through this entire thing, but we're going to give it a run. Okay. Because it's a good article. It's a very good article. And I think it should be paid attention to because it's correct on top of that. Ready? Although the conversation was cordial, there was no deal. That's the essence of the American or the Alaskan summit. The meeting on Friday was warm, but instead of agreements, there was a press conference, a canceled lunch, and very little clarity about what was achieved. Participants and insiders haven't disclosed any specifics. What is known is that Putin and Trump agreed on most parameters of a deal, with few unnamed sticking points. A preliminary truce may have been discussed. Territorial exchanges were not. The Americans still hope to pull Ukraine's Zelensky into the process with a trilateral summit, but no date set. You know, perhaps it is now, but by asking next time in Moscow, Putin drew a smile, but Trump dodged, saying that he would only face heavy criticism if he went. Well, that's not what they were saying beforehand. They said there was going to be a couple. The first, there would be a U.S. one and then a Russian one, and then all of a sudden it changed. So I'm wondering about that as well. The near total absence of any detail can be read in two ways. Nothing was really agreed upon. The agenda, slim right from the start, could suggest that. Or, just as possibly, the Kremlin and the White House have reached their understanding, but are keeping it under wraps to prevent third parties from sabotaging it. EU, Zelensky himself. Either way, the outcome was satisfactory to both of the leaders. Trump can now indefinitely postpone a disastrous trade war with India and China, which secondary sanctions on Russia would have triggered. Putin can drive home the point that a temporary ceasefire is insufficient. Time has come to talk about full peace. I agree. Trump's comments after the summit suggest Washington has quietly accepted the Russian framework, meaning end it, no ceasefire. This marks a departure from Ukraine, Western European line of first a truce, first a ceasefire, then peace. This is smart, people. If Trump actually achieved this, get rid of the war. Get yourself your Nobel Peace Prize. If it's about you, I don't necessarily believe it is. I really believe he does want to stop the killing. But it will lead to it if you can pull this off. And I think it should be pulled off because the idiots that are still pushing your administration into war, you know, Lindsey Graham, yet again. The next move is Zelensky's move right now. And he has his one card to play. And in Anchorage, Putin and Trump agreed on the core terms of a deal. Then the person who has to accept it is this guy. And if not, the U.S. needs to remove him. They put him in power, let him remove him. On Monday, Zelensky travels to Washington to meet Trump. There are two paths possible out of there. First, Zelensky could dig in with Europe. Without European backing, he would panic, refuse the terms, and repeat his February 28 crybaby deal with Trump. That would sharply sour U.S.-Ukraine relations even further and could lead Washington to abandon them because Marco Rubio has made that threat just recently. Second and more likely scenario is this, his delay. Zelensky will float his alternative plan. Maybe he'll get back on the circuit heading to places like Sweden, Finland, anywhere else, Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, off to Germany, off to Belgium. And he can talk to these people about his peace plan, about his victory plan. We got to put Russia in its place. They need more sanctions. He's already talked about that, right? He wants a three-way summit with Trump, Putin, and himself. But the calculation is simple. Moscow refuses to speak directly to Kiev until there's already a U.S.-Russian framework. But now there could be. But how Trump reacts will be determined this pace. He has leverage over both Kiev and Brussels. If he wants to end the war, he must use this leverage. If not, the talks will stall yet again. and the catastrophic battlefield collapse by Ukraine will continue, because that's happening, friends and neighbors. Minsk, Moscow, or nowhere. I'm in Minsk right now, just to point out, it's a beautiful place. Sun is just coming up here. If a trilateral meeting does occur, now remember, Trump called Lukashenko just past couple of days. I've been trying to talk to people here about what they think it is, but they don't talk about him here. Lukashenko has already extended the invitation to Trump. Both Putin and Zelensky can reach the Belarusian capital easily. For the Kremlin, such a summit would serve one purpose: to corner Zelensky collectively and force him to accept what's already been decided. But this is all speculation, of course. A diplomatic blockbuster is in progress, so they'll ask. You know what? I'm going to find out if they're here, though. I have press credentials. I'm going to go try to get in. So the Alaska summit ended without a treaty, without even a date, but it ended without acrimony, without confrontation, with both leaders claiming satisfaction. That alone makes it extremely significant. For Trump, it is meant as a relief from impending trade war that he doesn't want to be part of, and a step toward reshaping Washington's approach to Russia, which needs to happen anyway. For Putin, it signaled that the U.S. president is willing to bypass Western Europe and more directly to the question of peace. As ever, the decisive variable is the Green Goblin. Trump has placed the future of negotiations in Zelensky's hands, but he's pushing warnings, which I'll get to in just a second. We might be able to get to a couple. But Zelensky, boxed in by Western European partners and his own political survival, will prefer to stall. If he does, U.S.-Ukrainian ties will suffer. If he hesitates, Washington will move on without him. Either way, the Alaska summit is not an end, but a beginning, a first act in what promises to be a long and unpredictable diplomatic blockbuster, with all the drama that we'll share right here on internationalflavor.com, where the truth just tastes better. I kind of like that. That ended up pretty well. Going to give myself a hand, but let's get to Rubio real quick, and then I'll end this up. The conflict will get worse if Kyiv does not agree to a peace deal with Moscow, said Marco Rubio. U.S. does not intend to force Ukraine into a peace settlement, but Kyiv needs to realize the conflict is going to get worse if it isn't resolved. U.S. Trump president said the warring parties were pretty close to the end following the summit of his Russian counterpart, Putin. He noted that Ukraine has to agree to any peace deal. Rubio told CBS on Sunday there's no condition that can be imposed upon Ukraine. It's up to Ukrainians. Well, I note he said Ukrainians and not the Green Goblin. We shall see. But it's clear after 3.5 years, they want it done too, by the way, that this war is getting worse. It's not getting better. It's only going to get worse, he said. For the bloodshed to come to an end, both Ukraine and Russia are going to have to give. Both sides should expect to get something from this. He acknowledged it's a very good thing, or very difficult thing to do, and they may find some of the results distasteful. So, I don't know, people. I hope that you can agree with me that this war needs to end, and I really appreciate you for listening to me on this Sunday night, which for me is Monday morning in Minsk, Belarus. Belarus, as you're supposed to say it. I hope that you tune in every night from 9 p.m. to 10:30 p.m. Chicago time, and listen to me rant about the state of the world today. Listen to us. Follow the schedule at damradio.com/schedule. You can listen live anytime, damradio.com/live. I very much appreciate each and every one of you, and I will see you tonight.